Mr. Perfect. Do you know the little proverb?
Okay, stand up and try.
What good will it do to smoke and to chew, to swear and to drink, and never to think what the end may be?
Perfect. I should have brought a star for you. Very good. Okay, like I said last night, there will be all kinds of vice and temptations in your life as you grow up. It may not be weed and those kind of things, but there will be things that you need to be careful. Okay, very good. Tonight, for the young people, children, there is no honorable way to do a dishonorable thing. I believe that with all of my heart. And I want you all to believe it. Let's say it together. There is no honorable way to do a dishonorable thing. Very good. Okay. I've entitled what I want to share with you this evening, Maintaining the Right Balance. And I want to read some passages out of the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. And we'll read several sections of passages there, and it's Moses giving admonition to the children of Israel as they're making preparation and learning about family things. You know, they were slaves in Egypt, and they had gotten pretty carnal. They had forgotten about God, and all they could think about was how could they get out of there, and their work was overbearing and oppressive. And so Moses is reminding them of some important things that they need to take care of in their home and family life. And so I'd like to start with Deuteronomy 6, verse 1 through 12. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that ye might do them in the land whither you go to possess it, that thou mayest fear the Lord thy God to keep all of his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy son's son, all the days of thy life, that thou the days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that ye may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers has promised thee, into the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and thou shalt have love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk to them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And they shall bind them as a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. And it shall be that when the Lord thy God have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thee, thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee good and great and cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, and when thou shalt have eaten and be full, listen, then beware lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Let's go over to chapter 7, 6 and through 9. For thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Now the Lord did not set his love upon you or choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the least, the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, that the Lord brought you out of the mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the land of Pharaoh of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments 1,000 generations. That's 20,000 years. A generation is 20 years, right? 20,000 years. God's commandments, faithfulness, generation and generation. I've got to the place in my life where I'm not impressed by Anabaptist rock stars. I am impressed with generation after generation of faithful children and grandchildren and children. I'll talk more about that later. Chapter 8, verse 10 through 14. The children that are at home come home at Thanksgiving, and we sat down to eat a meal together, and I read them these verses before we eat. If you will allow me, I want to read it in the New International Version. Verse 10 of chapter 8, and when you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land that he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commandments, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you today. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, and you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increase, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God. Now down to verse 18. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gave you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore unto your forefathers as it is today. If you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed, like the nations the Lord destroyed before you, so that you can be will be destroyed for not obeying the Lord your God. And what a serious, serious thing the Lord said, if you do this, this is going to happen to you. And yet we just, man, we're going to pile up the money and build that big house. And somehow I think Anabaptist people don't get it. I work for my boys, and one of the things that I do that I enjoy is that I help the boys cut corn silage in July, and we have a kind of a ring where we go around to about 6 or 7 farms, and I'm the lowly cart driver, but they bring me food, and I listen to them young guys talking on the radio about their girlfriends, and it just don't get much better than that, and it's air conditioned and a nice soft seat, and I have a lot of time to think. One thing that I noticed recently, that I saw a lot of rabbits. I saw quail and little turkeys hiding in the corn again. And when I was a boy, I used to raise quail and pheasants. And to those of you who care, I got them off of Joe Lehman. But anyway, I don't know what happened to him. Is he still living? Well, I went to school with Joe Lehman's boys, and they got me the fever, but anyway. I still, even today, love the unmistakable whistle of the male bobwhite quail in the spring when he's sitting up there on the fence post, and he's calling his call, trying to win a mate. And the female has such a distinct, lovely call of her own as well. But you know, Quail is the bottom of the food chain. Often experience a high mortality rate as high as 70 or 80%. They are prolific breeders and on an optimum conditions may raise several broods each summer. But that was pre-1980. There are several things that have brought pressure to bear to bring about the demise and almost total collapse of quail populations in the lower south and north Florida. Y'all still have quail around here? Well, when I was a boy, South Carolina was eating up with them, but they're gone pretty much. In the Edisto Experiment Station is Clemson University's experiment farm in our area. Entomologist Dr. Jay Chapin says that quail have simply gone from agricultural research facility. And in the 1980s, he said there was 20 coveys there at the research station, and today there are none. In 1978, the first coyotes were spotted in South Carolina. And in the 40-some years since then, coyotes have made their home in all the counties of South Carolina, and no more has it been more noticeable than in the wildlife community. It has totally upset the balance in forest and field, the rabbits and the quail. The turkey nests, the little fawns have been ravaged in many areas. A few years ago, the local county trapper came, we hired him to come, and he worked in our community, worked on our farm and the Brubakers and several others together. And each winter he comes and he works his art of craftiness against the coyotes. And he didn't get them all, but boy, did he ever sober them up. And that spring, this past spring, most of the does had fawns by their side and there was rabbits. Suddenly, my wife Grace has become the old Mr. McGregor as in Peter Rabbit this past summer. She planted her okra four times. The eggplants and tomatoes had the sides eaten off of the fruit. And there was baby rabbits running in the pole beans and the watermelon vines. There was big rabbits come out of their hiding at night, and they'd graze off her southern peas or anything else. We tried hot sauce. We tried hot lead. And they just seemed to like multiply like rabbits. Have you ever heard of the rabbit plagues of Australia? You have. Well, you've heard of the plagues of Egypt. Well, this is the rabbit plagues of Australia. In 1859, a man named Thomas Austin moved to Australia from England, and he loved his hunting. You know, the royal family and their fox hunting and their dogs. And, well, they liked rabbits. There wasn't any rabbits in Australia. And so he had some imported. He imported 24 rabbits from England. And in 70 years' time, after the introduction, the rabbit population in Australia ballooned to an estimated 10 billion rabbits. And so these little rabbits, they reproduce 18 to 30 babies a year. And since it's a tropical, moderate climate there, they breed year-round. And in about 4 months' time, the baby rabbits are having rabbits. And there was just nothing to keep these things in check. And they moved at a rate of about 80 miles a year from eastern Australia to the west. And they covered New South Wales and then South Australia, then Queensland. And then by 1890, there was actually rabbits spotted almost to the west side of Australia. For most of the 19th century, rabbits were just everywhere, and they tried shooting, they tried trapping. And then the Australian government got this idea that they would build this net wire fence. And they built a fence 1,138 miles long from top to bottom of Australia. And unfortunately, the rabbits would be either jumping across or digging under while they were building the fence. And so some got across, and so they decided to build another fence. And so they built one from there to the west. And that one was 724 miles long. Well, they tried to cut them off again, and they built a 160-mile fence. That's a lot of fence. And rabbits, they showed up everywhere anyway. And so, and despite the enormity of the project and all the government funding, the fence didn't work. So the Australian government also experimented with biological methods to control the rabbits. So in 1950, they released mosquitoes and fleas carrying the myxoma virus. And they were released into the wild. And this virus came from South America, and their rabbits died like a plague. And it really wiped out a lot of rabbits, about 90% of them. But the problem was the mosquitoes did not live where it was droughty desert. And so some rabbits lived in the desert, and they developed an immunity. And then, because they didn't get sick very bad, y'all know how viruses and immunity works, and so they were just inoculated or vaccinated against the virus, and so it wasn't long, boy, there was rabbits everywhere again. Then in 1955, they found an RHD virus. It's a hemorrhaging disease of that affects rabbits that lived in arid zones, and so they again released that and really got the rabbits in check. But there still is no natural predators, and some of these rabbits have developed immunity to those diseases. And today, many farmers use conventional means for eradicating rabbits from their lands, although a rabbit population is still a fraction of what it was in 1920. The burden on the country's economy and agricultural systems is huge. And so in the last 150 years, they still haven't developed a perfect virus that will eradicate these feral rabbits that don't belong in Australia. And so I'm telling you that because I'm warning you about things that you want to bring into your family life. And if you don't have a balance, don't bring rabbits to Australia if you don't bring the coyotes and the wolves, okay? And the same thing has happened here with what? Starlings and English sparrows. Please take them home. Okay. If you travel from my little community of Govan, South Carolina, to Denmark, South Carolina, you will go by some of the Sanctified Brethren's homes, people I go to church with. And one morning, there was a rabbit for sale sign out in their yard. And someone said that every child should be allowed to raise rabbits so that they learn to lose money graciously. Well, in creation, there is a balance, and we are not told how God managed all that before the fall, but we know that one day when the little rabbits went to school, they figured out at recess that it wasn't fun to play with the little coyotes and bobcats and the hawk children. How did God keep all this stuff in balance before? And so predators do have their purpose. There is balance in creation. Now, let's go back and make some comparisons to quail and the Christian family life in our time. I went to a seminar a few years ago, conservation tillage and other eco-friendly farm practices, and they had these little workshops, and I was tired of those workshops, but they had one on raising quail, or trying to restore quail habitat on farms in South Carolina. And so I went, and boy, I got me some pretty glossy brochures, you know, printed by the state wildlife, and how to have quail habitat. They had done their homework and studied their lesson, but they didn't really have a complete answer. And so I listened to their presentation, and they said that they took college interns, and they would have them there 5 days before the little chicks hatched, the little quail hatched, and they would start talking to the eggs and making little whispering or their own peculiar noises. And then when the little quail hatched, they lived with them in the brooders for 5 more days. On day 6, these little quail would follow that student right down like they thought it was the mama. And so you'd make the little noise and the little birds would come scurrying after you. And so these interns took the little quail out into the fields to see what it was and what they needed. And they would take them out and they'd weigh the birds in the morning and they'd weigh them in the evening. They would do fecal samples to see what they were eating. They sprayed airplanes over the top of them. They did everything. It's called imprinting. And so how are you and I imprinting the little ones that God has placed into our care? I want to tell you, you need to have balance in your home. Just as there's basic needs for every pair of quail to successfully brood and fledge a flock of little chicks, the same concepts apply to Christian parenting as well. The first one I want to suggest is warmth. When a little quail hatches, it's about as big, a little fuzzball about as big as a nickel. And 2 little legs, and that fuzzball can really move. And if it's in the tall grass or in the, you cannot find them. They're gone. You can't find them. And they are dependent on their mother for warmth at night and on cool, cloudy days. Much of the high-protein diet they need is to grow what? Flight feathers. It's flight feathers they need, not fat for warmth. We'll get to that later. Small children need warmth spiritually, an emotional environment to be able to flourish and grow into healthy, balanced adults. Yes, blankets are sometimes necessary too. That peaceful, loving environment, void of danger and sharp criticism and retort. No child should ever go to bed at night with the slightest doubt that they are loved, wanted, needed, and belong, and that their parents' love is all enduring. A wet, soggy spring and summer, such as what we had last year, is very hard on quail chicks. And the cold, wet blanket of criticism, fault-finding, and anger towards our children will cause a lot of suffering and a high spiritual mortality rate as well. James chapter 1, verse 19. My dear brothers, fathers and mothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry, for man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in training and in the instruction of the Lord. Well, little quail need cover. An adult quail's diet consists almost entirely of seeds and grain. But a quail chick must have a diet almost entirely of insects and worms to grow. The only way for a little chick to survive the claws and teeth of the hungry hawks, bobcats, coons, and coyotes is either to have safe places where predators can't get at them, or they need to be able to quickly fly. A little quail can fly when they are just a few days old. They'll get fat later on, but they need to fly now because of the danger of getting eaten. So most mama quails keep their quails in border areas where they can scurry back under the blackberry brambles and then go out into the field to eat the worms and things they can find there. Blackberry brambles, tall stemmy weeds and flowers, ragweed, sunflowers, and black-eyed Susans are perfect border things for little quail to keep the hawks and things away from them. I want to tell you this evening, there is a world of jackals and vultures that would be very happy to find your little ones out scratching for bugs, and all that we need without the cover of provided by a godly home in a scripturally sound, disciplined church community. It is very difficult to raise your babies out in the harsh environment without the protection of a godly home and a godly church community. I'm not going to say it won't happen, but your mortality rate is going to be worse than quail. Scientists and wildlife biologists suggest that the lack of good cover in fence row to fence row tillage practices in the later 20th century has had as negative effect on the quail population as the coyotes. In the last 20 to 30 years, there's been a significant increase in no-till or strip-till farming, and that has been helpful to restoring nesting and safe places for quail. And as I read to you the verses in Deuteronomy, it is the responsibility of who? Godly parents to provide that cover needed to protect the innocent, impressionable lives in that God has placed into your care. It's not the preacher's problem. Well, sometimes they make it his problem, or the school teachers. It is mom and dad that need to provide that safe environment to raise those little ones. Help your children make good choices and maintain healthy friendships. Influence is huge. I can't stress it enough. Teach them to be polite and courteous, friendly to all, but the closer friendships where we find our approval and fulfillment in our social lives should be chosen very carefully. I went to public school. John Paul, I remember you in Turner Ashby. We did go to Berea 1 year, and then I went back into the public school systems in South Carolina, and it was good for me. I don't have time to expand on that. I'm pro-Christian school, but I learned my neighbors. I knew who lived around. We rode the bus with them. We ate soul food. We learned to understand their language and so much more. And when our son was killed, it was those black children from town who were now adults who came out and hugged us and cried, not the uppity whites. We went to public school, and there was involvement or in the sports programs, and my dad, we went to school and then we went home and did chores. We didn't hang around at school for social activities. He knew that the casualty rate would be too high. I knew of one family in our community whose boys got on the bus one morning and they said, "Are y'all going to the homecoming at TA tonight?" And we said, "No, man, we wouldn't even ask our dad something like that." And he said, "Well, we asked Father, and he said, it sounds like foolishness, but I guess, well, I have 50 years to look back and see how that turned out. It wasn't so good." It came a time in the life of my boys when coon hunting was the ultimate sport. I'm not against coon hunting. Man, at midnight, I want to be in the bed, but not out in a swamp with a bunch of dogs. But they thought coon hunting was amazing. But their dad was troubled with the environment. Most of those guys were snuff dippers and drink and foul mouth. So much so that I wanted to help accommodate my boys in this ridiculous sport. Parents, you must say yes when you can, okay? And so I went and bought an expensive coonhound dog and gave it to Gordon Amstutz, who was working for me, because he was caught up in this same craze and insanity. But I knew that I could trust Gordon to be out with my boys. And so he's now the pastor of our church. And he's not a coon hunter anymore. I weaned him. Philip Did you ever go sucker dipping?
Yes.
That was amazing, wasn't it? And, you know, in the spring of the year when the suckers would start to run, just the young guys, just you had to get a pole and a net. And so the late Simeon Heatwole and my dad collaborated. And so Stephen and Claire and I were given use of a tractor and manure spreader to haul our gear around so that we could come home when it was time to go home. And we didn't have to say, well, we just didn't have a ride, or, you know, those guys were partying and drinking and smoking and, you know. And so my hat is off to Simeon Heatwole and my dad, because they accommodated something that was legit but had dangers. They were planting the blackberry brambles and the sunflowers around the water there for our cover. You get my point. Don't just tell your parent, your children, no, 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 no. They'll get discouraged. But figure out a system. That's my point. Be diligent, engaged, and involved in your children's lives, especially during those young and impressionable years. Daycare may be a way of imprinting other people's children for good, but as a general rule, I don't advise that you let other people imprint your children at daycare. Be careful who you put your children under their influence if they do not share your faith and practice. Time exposed is influence. Now, on the flip side, I want to be fair. Beware of the patriarchal movement and its approach. That's not the answer either. Where daddy knows best, daddy knows everything, he's going to do all the teaching, and he's going to baptize them, and he's going to marry them, and we don't trust anybody else. You notice when the quail are feeding, there's always one little rooster quail sitting up on the fence post, and he's watching for a shadow of a hawk coming over. He's watching for a coyote or a fox that's sniffing around, and he will sound the alarm. It helps to have community. And so when I'm down there feeding with my birds, I want Philip to be up on the fence post, and maybe I'll be on the fence post when he's taking care of his chicks. You see how that works? This patriarchal movement where daddy knows everything, community is way better. I had two Hutterite girls as students in Thailand a few years ago. Born again girls, outstanding. They almost convinced me to move into community. I gave it up, but there is some pluses. Ask the little quail. One of the best forms of cover for protecting your family is consistent family devotional time. Remember, influence is huge. The time you spend with your children and the things you do with them will make a difference. Give your family the gift of a daily time of God together, with God together. It should be the anchor to which each day holds to. Morning or evening, you take your pick. I'm going to tell you that family devotions are never convenient. It is a discipline, and there will be plenty of reasons and excuses to challenge its existence. We are not a generation of farmers anymore. Most of the churches that I go to and speak at anymore, they start church at 6 o'clock in the evening. I was in Canada recently, and they started at 7:45 because there was a lot of dairy farmers in their church. And so we've evolved into away from an agrarian people to more urban people, and that's fine. But I always remember coming in from the chores, eating breakfast, and having family worship before we went to school. That was the model that we had for our children. And I hope that's the model my children are having with theirs. We're farmers. We can work it into our schedule. So I had a friend who run a metal breaking business. His son was on a carpenter crew, and his girls worked at a bulk food store or something. And he just was so frustrated. When they became teenagers, he said, "I gave up. There was something to go to every night. You know, it was choir practice or ball game or this or legitimate things." And he said he got his family together one day and he says, "Look, what? Why don't we try this? I have to leave for work at 6. Your brother has to leave at 6. And you girls later on through the day. Why don't we all get and meet here at 5:30 in the morning? And you girls can come down and, you know, just be modest. You don't need to be dressed for the day. And we will have devotions. And y'all can go back to bed. And me and my son's going to work." And they agreed to do that. And they valued that time of making a spot in their day where even the teenagers could be there with dad and the brother and have family devotions. Mark chapter 1, verse 35, very early in the morning, a great while before day, he went to a solitary place to pray. Psalm 5, 3, "My voice shalt thou hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning I will direct my prayer to thee and will look up to thee. For thou art not a God that hath pleasure in wickedness, neither shalt thou dwell with thee, neither shall evil dwell with thee." So I want to suggest that God is not a God looking for great performance. God is just looking for worshipers. In John chapter 4, you know the story of him and the Samaritan woman. And Jesus says this, "But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him." In all other religions, people are seeking a God to worship. But in the Christian faith, God is looking for me and you. Be there. Try to keep your family devotions from being boring. Someone has said it's a sin to bore people with the Bible. Ask your children questions. Read a more flowable translation if you care to. Read Bible stories, missionary stories. When our children got to be fourth, fifth grade, Grace is a bookish person and reader, and she bought volumes. She's probably got 60 books of missionary biographies. We wanted our children to be missionaries first and farmers if God wanted them to be. And we read everything from Jim Elliot to, we just got done reading William Jennings. And so we started that 30 years ago, and we're still reading books together. We read the Bible too, but it's a time set out in our morning where Grace reads me a book about some faithful man or. And our children have heard a lot of them. And now the neighbors, the young couples, our church come and borrow Grace's book. It was a tremendous, worthwhile investment. Spend some time singing. It doesn't need to sound like angels or the altar of praise. You know, maybe you're into Southern gospel. I'm not. But if you want to sound like the Soggy Bottom Boys, whatever. Just remember, it's your family learning to worship God who is seeking those who will worship him. My grandfather, Blosser, lived in the Dale Enterprise community, and I heard that he was ill. He had pancreatic cancer. And so Grace and I had come south to one of my siblings' wedding, and we decided to drive up to Harrisonburg on our way back to Red Lake, Ontario, to see Grandpa Mail. And we went and visited him. I never saw him alive after that. But we spent a night at Grandfather Ralph's Heatwolves. And, of course, my grandmother was deaf. And we slept there and had breakfast in the morning. And Grandmother read the Bible because she couldn't hear it if anybody else read it. So she always read the Bible out loud. And then grandfather prayed. And he got down through his prayer, and he was praying for his grandchildren that were kicking against the pricks. And I did a quick retrospect of my life. And then I thought of my 66 first cousins and wondered who he was talking about. Well, I knew my grandfather cared. And then there was the dairy tester, Glenwood Rubush, who would come in and eat breakfast with us after milking. And he would stay out at the kitchen table, and we'd go in the living room and have devotions. But he listened. He knew what we were doing, that we were reading and we were singing. And we were praying every morning. And then there was Miriam Wanger. Do you all remember Miriam Wanger? She would come work for my mother when she had my last siblings. She had a lot of children, sort of. And Miriam Wanger wouldn't join us either. But she would sit out there in the kitchen, and I'd watch. And she'd be tapping her toe, you know, as we were singing. It was working on her. Some years ago, there was a lady that we knew from Ontario. She was not Mennonite. She was evangelical free. She's a devout lady. But she came into our area for a wedding, and she joined us for family worship. And later we got a card, and in it she says, you know, I've been a Christian and raised in a Christian home all my life, but we have never had family devotions. If I ever get married, that's what I want to have for my family. Kim Robinson. Some years ago, the Clemson Extension dairy specialist, he's Lutheran, and I don't know why he came to the house that morning, but it was one of those mornings when I peeped, you know, the dad needs to peep once in a while just to check on everybody, and I looked across the table out the kitchen door, and here was this man from Clemson University watching us pray. Evidently one of the children or Grace was praying, and he caught my eye and just bloop, like he had a stroke. Down he went. And he crawled. I never saw him. And he must have crawled out and got in his truck and left. But, you know, I wondered, what did Marion Hires tell his people at the office that day about that family he saw praying around the table and having their devotions? But he'd never seen that before. And it's not about me. It's just about taking care of your little chicks. Prayer. Learn to be specific in your family prayers. The children as they go to school. Missionaries, you know. The needs of the unday or the unsaved. I want to read you a story. Faithful in family worship. Doest faithfully whatever thou doest. 3 John 5. Timid and modest Christians sometimes omit family devotions in the presence of distinguished visitors. And it is a sore trial for Christian mothers to maintain a family altar to lead the devotions before strangers. The following incident may stimulate some fainting heart to fidelity. 10 years ago, when I was an unconverted man, I boarded in the family of a pious woman whose husband was not a Christian. There was a daughter of 19, another of 14, and a son of about 10. Every morning after breakfast, I heard that humble woman gather her family together in the kitchen and read with them a chapter in the Bible. Then, as I could not help listening, there was a peculiarity of service that mystified me. At last, I asked one day if I might remain. She hesitated. Her daughter blushed, but said that I could do so if I really desired it. So I sat down with the rest of them, and they gave me a testament, and we all read. And then, kneeling on the floor, that mother began to pour her prayer audibly for her dear ones there, her husband, herself, and then pausing a moment as if to gather up her energies or wing her faith, uttered a tender, affectionate supplication for me. She closed, and her daughter began to pray. Poor girl, She was afraid of me. I was from college and I was her professor. But she tremulously asked for a blessing as usual. And then came the other daughter, and at last the son, the youngest of that circle, who only repeated the Lord's Prayer and with one little petition of his own. And then his amen was said. But no one arose. I knew on an instant that they were waiting for me to pray. And I, poor prayerless me, had no word to say. It almost broke my heart. I hurried from the room, desolate and guilty. A few weeks only passed when I asked their permission to come in once more. And then I too prayed and thanked for my ever patient Savior and for the hope in my heart and the new song on my lips. As it is a great thing to remember that there in the gospel as in the law, provision made not only for thy son, thy daughter, and thy manservant, and thy maidservant, but even for the stranger within thy gates. And now I want to move on to food. To be successful in raising her chicks to where they can live independently, it takes lots and lots of high-protein food. Not just any food will do. A quail chick will eat its weight in insects every day to grow feathers for flight. And those of you who've raised a family of boys can identify. Some mother said this. Mealtime is when boys come to the table and continue to eat. Are we as successful and consistent in providing spiritual food for those young ones in our care as Mama Quail is for her little chicks? Grace and I had an acquaintance that seemed to constantly obsess about the type of healthy foods her children had access to, but that same mother would push her children's high chairs in front of the T&V. And when she found them in the way or seemingly underfoot, she had no or little concern for the nutrition of the food that she fed them and their young minds. Those children are in their 20s now. One is vegan and the other, and he's pretty healthy too. But spiritually, it's been a disaster. It is very important that you not only know where your children are feeding, but who with and what it is they're feeding on. There has probably been more change in the advances of science and medicine, travel and communication in the last 20 or 30 years than there has been in the last 100 before. And all of those changes that's happened in the last 21st century. And it's probably not over yet. Grace and I raised our family, for the most part, pre-digital revolution in the age of the internet. Our oldest son, Gideon, and his girlfriend wrote letters. Our daughter and her boyfriend were a bit older, and they mostly text or had phone conversations, but I pled with them to write letters. There's value in that. Josh and Marcia text some and emailed some, but invested heavily in jet fuel. It cost them $750 to have a date. And so that was 16, 17 years ago. Airplane tickets to places where they don't want to go are expensive. And then Joel and Jody, I think, were pretty much paperless. And then Aaron and Andrea, through the wonders of the internet, he had one date, went to Nicaragua, and was able for 2 years have audio and visual and be 3,000 miles apart, came home and got married, saved all that money. Well, it has its downsides too. Is it wrong? No. Are there dangers in every way? I feel a little bit like an idiot standing up here talking in front of you, but oh well. There are challenges to good parenting, and in my childhood, just as there was in the 80s and 90s when we raised our children, Parenting has never been for sissies or the faint-hearted. But parents of young children this evening, never has sin be so convenient, so available, so private, and so raw. You're familiar with the verses in the book of Esther, chapter 4, when Mordecai knew what was going to become to his people, the Jewish people, and he told Esther, come, I've got to tell you something. She says, I'm not interested. And then in verse 14 of chapter 4, for if you remain silent at this time and remain in relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows, but you have come to the royal position for such a time as this. And you know that it broke her stony heart and she agreed to go see the king. It was a very difficult time in the history of God's people. And I think of families who raised godly families in time of war and persecution. Extreme hardship. But I want to tell you this evening, your adversary is more sly and more cunning than all of that. The enemy is not so clearly defined tonight. It's not that there's new sins that have been invented. Just read the book of Judges. It's awful. But what has changed is the easy access to those sins and temptations. Practically speaking, the availability of the internet in our homes and phones hasn't really brought a mass exodus of the faithful from our churches. We find it a useful tool. There has been sudden tragic failures, and it has happened on occasion. There were tragic failures back in the old days. But we must be careful not to be lulled asleep and allow something very difficult and very painful, very sneaky, to come in and take our little children away. May the day never come when we realize that a brother or sister who has embraced a strong faith and has quickly shed key basic principles of Christianity. And I'm going to talk about that one time while I'm here. I have watched so many students, godly young people, that I taught at Heritage Bible School and maybe in Thailand, come home, put earbuds in their ears, and listen to podcasts and fill their heads full of mush. And they went out into Reformed theology. And seriously? That's another sermon. Maybe the youth will have lost their sensitivity towards violence, or our brotherhood becomes acclimatized to sinful lifestyles and choices. Perhaps the day will come, and maybe already be here, when young children receive their Bible instruction from silly animated cartoon characters, but none from their father. You see these cool vans going down the road and them children are back in those big seats looking at TVs on the... It kind of grinds me. Veggie Tales. What's with tomatoes and cucumbers teaching your children? It's nonsense to me. That's your job. You're the dad. Those verses in Deuteronomy that I read? Not the screen. And I want to read this. Failing to choose carefully and chart a time-tested course in long voyages does not prevent one ship from leaving shore. You can leave anytime you want, and you don't even need to pick a spot across the lake where you want to end up, but you can leave. But it is the danger of an uncertain destination, the helpful winds of brotherhood that might carry us to our intended harbor and destination. But probably we will end up dashed against the rocks of remorse and disappointment because we have allowed poor vision and certain influences from the internet to creep in and change us. I'm not anti-internet. I'm just telling you, you've got to up to a whole new level of vigilance. You better have two Mr. Roosters on the fence post watching for those shadows coming across. Okay? 1 Peter 5:8, be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion or a sneaky coyote, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And so, I don't want to be repetitive. I'm sure that you all are concerned and have stopgap measures in your community for safety. But I am concerned. You know, I spend a lot of time in airports, and the men are all hunkered down, playing games on their phones, and the women are all over there playing social media on theirs, and nobody's talking to each other. And I cringe thinking about raising godly, pure, and wholesome children when the choices are so many and the consequences are so high. But God will give you wisdom. I'm sure He will. Shall we pray? Father, I thank You that You have not left us unprotected, and that like the little quail, You've put protection into our lives, and we have the church, we have brotherhood, and we have Christian moms and dads. And oh, it's been such a blessing. Help us to never scorn or scoff or take these things for granted. Eternity is a long time to miss. Father, bless these people as we depart. May they be encouraged and strengthened to press on and be faithful to raise up godly generation in this time that we believe is the end times. So we ask that in Jesus' name. Amen. Would the brother who led